Rillian, why don't you go ahead and start us off the classic old school way you used to start podcasts?
Boy, it's been a while. Let's see if I have it still. Hello, you're listening to the Narnia Web podcast, and I'm Rillian.
That was usually...
That
was in the middle of the theme music, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the middle of the theme. Here, let me do it, because I think it actually was a little different. Hello, I'm your host, Rillian, and you're listening to the NarniaWeb.com podcast.
I think that was it. That was, of course, after it became the NarniaWeb.com podcast.
After it became, which it started off as Narnia News in a Nutshell, mm-hmm. which I still like that name better.
Uh-huh. But it's become the problem is, it's not, number one, it's not just Narnia News anymore. And
no,
number two, it's not in a nutshell. That's for
right.
sure.
We'll jump into the history of the podcast in just a little bit.
Getting ahead of ourselves. It's episode 100.
100. 100.
Wow.
Who would have thunk? Yeah, when I first got my private message from this guy, Rillian, who I'd seen around the forum, but probably didn't talk to a huge amount, about, hey, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this Narnia podcast I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was early 2006.
Man, those were the days.
Yep, 99 episodes later.
Wow.
I was so young back then.
I seriously was.
That's a long time ago.
And we're all old now. We're going to basically take a little break from the news, because the news is taking a break from us.
They're taking a break from book commentaries.
We're going to go back and basically sit down, recollect, just talk about the early days of the Narnia films, of Narnia Web, everything.
Yeah, now your listeners can't see, but we're around a campfire right now. And all sipping hot cocoa, reflecting on the old days. 100 episodes.
Someday.
Yeah. But I wanted to start off with we're going to basically just kind of start from like the very beginning and then try to just take it, just really let it come as it comes. And you'll be able to kind of see how, especially if you're kind of came into the Narnia Web, Narnia films about halfway through. Or even a third of the way through, you'll kind of see some of the history too of it. And I want to start off with a question for you two. Where do you remember where you were when you first heard that Narnia films were being made?
You want to go first, Jim Fan?
Well, so I'm different in the fact that I found out that they were making the movies before I had even read the books. I didn't know anything about the book.
But look at how far she's come, guys.
I can tell you exactly where I was. My sister, she was on IMDb, and she was looking up the Narnia movie for some reason. I'm not sure why, because I don't think she had read the books either at that point. But she was watching one of the featurettes that had came out. It was the one about the Weta workshops, where they were talking about all the stuff that they were making.
For generations, the enchanted kingdom of Narnia has existed only in the mind's eye. Now, beginning with The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, special effects supervisor Richard Taylor and his team from Weta, winners of 4 Academy Awards for Lord of the Rings, are employing their wizardry to bring C.S. Lewis's magical world to life.
We've been working on Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe for 2 years now.
And I don't think that's what necessarily got me interested in, looking up the books. But shortly thereafter, I did read the books for the first time. And then I was like, oh, yeah, they are making a movie about this. So then I went online and I found all the trailer and all the information. And that's how I sort of got into it.
And next thing you know, you're a forum moderator.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you spent hours of your life talking about it online.
Less than a year, I would say about exactly a year later, I had my own website. I was a forum moderator. Yeah, it all kind of happened pretty quickly. But yeah, I'm different from you two in that I wasn't waiting for the trailer and the movie.
Yeah, whereas I just grew up with Narnia, like Rillian. I certainly grew up knowing what Narnia was. It wasn't until that's probably about 12 or 13 or so that I finally read them all the way through for myself and went, wow, these are so good. And I could, I've talked at length about that, so I won't go into that in a lot of detail, but how much they changed my life and how important they were to me. So late 2001, I want to say, early 2002, more like, somewhere in there, This is before I could see how not very internet savvy I was. Mm-hmm. My sister or someone told me, hey, I read in a magazine or something that they're making The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I got so excited, but also felt incredibly protective of it. That was the two emotions I felt at exactly the same time. And this could be so cool to see this made into a movie. This is also coming out a couple months after the first Lord of the Rings movie. So, it is Hollywood can get it right sometimes. Uh-huh. It was kind of the feeling in the air. And so I had this tremendous sense of excitement about what this could be. This book means so much to me, and I really think it could be a good film, but also feeling really protective of it and feeling like, as a fan, I really got to make the filmmakers understand somehow that this is really important to me.
Well, my first exposure to – well, not exposure, because my dad, grew up – I don't remember how old I was when I first read him. I remember how old – I was much younger when my dad read them to me. And fortunately, he read them in the publication order. So I got the right exposure. But the thing was, we were on a road trip in Colorado. And I believe it was literally a word on the street. My mom had gotten out of the car to get something, and she came back into the car. I don't know if she saw it in a news article on a stand or if she was kind of in a conversation with someone at a bookstore. But she goes, guys, there's a really – and later I learned that she was talking about Phil Anschutz. There's a really wealthy guy in Colorado who has purchased the rights to do the Chronicles of Narnia. He's going to make movies off of it.
Yeah.
He's going to make movies off of it. I thought, oh, wow, that was 2002. And the movie came, the first movie came out in December 2005.
Wow.
And and I basically started, eventually, as I'm becoming a little more internet savvy, I started exploring around the web a little bit. And actually, you guys could do this. I found my first post on narniaweb.com.
Oh.
You could search by member. I don't know if you still.
I don't want to see my first post.
You could search by member. I might pull it up for you, Glenfuddle.
No.
Basically, I actually got onto NarniaFans.com first, and I was Rendon on NarniaFans.com, and I came over to NarniaWeb, and the name Rendon was already taken, and the name Tyrion was already taken, and Peter was already taken.
Who took the name Tyrion? Gosh.
Oh, I don't know. He's a jerk.
How dare
he? And so I thought, well, hey, the name Rillian's not taken. And so I also shows you how early I came on, relatively, that Narnia Web was still fresh enough that you could take the name Rillian and you could actually have it, instead of Rillian 567, But anyway, so I basically got onto Narnia Web after a while, and my first post was August 31st, 2004. At 4:19 p.m., I posted, because we were talking about Andrew Adamson coming from the Shrek film. My first post was, my worst fear is that they will cast Eddie Murphy as Puzzle in the last battle. Just picture, oh, I've been a bad donkey.
See, I remember my first post, but I can't show it to you because it was actually modded off the forum. Yes, my very first post does not exist on the forum because when I posted, I broke some rule. And I think it was like, I was linking to other sites and I wasn't doing it in a way that was bringing the discussion to Narnia Web. And yeah, so that got deleted. And I was like, oh, that's not a very auspicious start, is it? But yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was in the early days and still in the early days and to some extent now, I've kind of walked toed that line a little bit with the forum moderators because there was this overwhelming sense of optimism from the fan base about the film, which caught me off guard. I was just so used to, you're fans, you're skeptical. That's what you do. Like Hollywood very often, most of the time, it seems like gets this stuff wrong. So we should be sort of skeptical about it. And they have to prove themselves to us. And I think just because this was coming out in the wake of Lord of the Rings, and so there's a sense of, hey, Hollywood gets it right every now and then. And sort of being true to the book was sort of, in terms of marketing, was kind of a more desirable idea for Hollywood.
Yeah.
I felt this need to kind of balance things out, I think. Guys, come on. We don't know this is going to be good yet. Calm down. And because I got a couple of notes from the mods every now and then.
I'll say who would like me to read Glenfiddle's first post on Narnia Web.
Well, for the record, this is not actually my first post because I did that under a couple of different screen names. I kept changing my mind about my screen name. I won't tell you what the other ones were.
Oh, great. Well, the first Glum Puddle post was, I am a bit disappointed that the rumors about Nicole Kidman playing the witch aren't true. I think she had the perfect, dangerous, and yet beautiful, beautiful misspelled look.
Shut up.
However, performance is a priority, not appearance, so we'll see.
Wow. Words of wisdom from the ancient past.
That does not sum up one puddle in a nutshell. I do not know what will not.
Okay. Well,
not from you.
I do remember... Okay, well, do you remember the whole Nicole Kidman saga?
Remember,
this is actually, I think, before I discovered Narnia Web. This is before your time, lad. So I think I was getting most of my Narnia news from the OneRing.net because I was not internet savvy enough to discover Narnia Web. And they were posting things about Nicole Kidman and how she was rumored she was going to play the White Witch. And then remember that thing about there was this rumor that actually kind of looked legit where she was going to sign this 7-movie contract to play the narrator?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think didn't we discover that there actually was some approaches with her?
I'm not sure if we ever quite got to the bottom of what happened there. But remember, that was the first kind of, right off the bat, that was the whole saga of Nicole Kidman was the first, like, big controversial issue I can remember being a part of in regards to Narnia.
Yeah. Do you guys remember the casting wish lists?
Yeah. They were there all the time. And I hated the ones where it was just... let's take all the Lord of the Rings cast members and put them in Narnia roles.
I have to give
Cate Blanchett. Everyone agreed Cate Blanchett has to play the White Witch.
I was still one of those guys who still, I wasn't wanting really anyone but Sean Bean to be someone. I thought he would be like a great Rhine elf or something. I don't know. He was the one character that I thought, man, dude, it'd be so awesome if Sean Bean were Miraz or something. I don't know.
Elijah Wood is Tumnus. I remember seeing that suggestion.
I know.
Oh, perish the thought.
I remember when Tumnus was cast and we were all freaking out because he seemed so young.
Yeah.
But yeah. I was like, wait, Tumnus is supposed to be this like old scholar guy, and of course that ended up working out really well. I think having them be closer in age.
Imagine the kind. Remember what kind of like controversy it got when the movie came out? People were like, "Oh, it's so like it makes Tumnus seem like a pedophile or something." And I'm like, imagine if he was a weird old guy, like
that would have been worse.
Exactly.
Well, that's why. Yeah, I think they knew that was a potential issue, and I think having him be closer in age, and the fact that Georgie and him bonded so well, really made it work. So it seemed like a weird choice initially, but of course it turned out well in retrospect. Do you want to go into the four kids casting? Or have you got something else?
Well, I was just about to say that. When it first felt real, like it was really happening, was when it's like out of the blue. I didn't even know the kids were cast, and then. I think we knew that Pippa Hall was casting them.
No, they'd been filming because remember we got pictures of the train station set with green screen around it. Those are in.
We knew the kids had been cast.
I remember a producer or someone said, "Look, I could give you their names, but they're not going to mean anything to you because they're all unknowns."
Yeah, well, I remember we got pictures. That's right, the train set pictures, I think, were the first ones that came out. And then the first pictures of the kids were the croquet scene, or the cricket scene, I guess. Yeah. And I thought, oh, my goodness. I thought, it's actually real. It's actually happening. That was when it really first hit me.
That was the lightning strike when I remember everyone where I saw that. And I remember everyone was saying that Lucy was so young. That was probably the big controversy, even though people overall had a positive reaction to it. Mm-hmm. I definitely did. I mean, all we're going off of is what they look like. But I remember Lucy, even though it makes perfect sense in retrospect, I don't know, probably just because of BBC actually left more of an impression on me than I thought. I was expecting Lucy to be a little older. But I remember I generally had a positive reaction to it. I actually remember consciously sitting down and looking at their names and memorizing them. And it's so funny to think that there was a time when I had to say, like, okay, it's William Papa, no, William Moseley, and actually had to commit them to memory.
Yeah. Oh.
But I definitely overall had a positive reaction to the four kids being cast, just based on their looks, their appearance at least. Yeah. I was really excited.
Yeah. And do you guys remember the whole Aslan casting saga?
Yeah.
With Brian Cox. And then there was all that controversy, like, he did a violent video game.
You know, I wasn't part of that.
And then, you know, there were all these rumors about, well, he may have lost weight and his voice changed.
Yeah.
And so they fired him.
Apparently those rumors turned out not to be true about the weight change.
Yeah.
But I really liked Brian Cox from the beginning. I thought he sounded like a really unexpected and interesting choice.
I thought he'd be good. And then Then we got like a little small rumor about Liam Neeson, and then it's like, but then we got another rumor about Russell Crowe,
and that actually looked pretty credible.
It looked very credible. I thought, oh my goodness, Russell Crowe's got to be. I thought partly because he'd be better than Liam Neeson, and I thought, oh, Russell Crowe, that'll be awesome. And then boom, they actually announced it like the next week.
Liam Neeson, didn't that come out after the trailer? That announcement.
Yeah, because I don't think they had it cast.
Yeah, so the trailer came out, and we still didn't know.
Yeah,
who
we didn't know who
Aslan
was, which is why, you know, they didn't have him speaking for a while. I mean, I guess they did have him speak in the full trailer.
Yeah,
but the teaser didn't have any lines.
But getting
about,
ahead of ourselves, the one of the most meaningful kind of memories for me is the one that you were talking about, Jim Fan, the Weta Workshop video.
Yeah,
about the Enchanted Kingdom of Narnia. and I actually remember I was at, and again, this shows you how long ago this was. We had dial-up internet, so that video that video came out, and I'm going, I'm going to chew my own hand off if I have to wait here and wait for this to load. So I had to run over to my friend's house who had high-speed internet.
Oh, I remember that.
And watch it there, and I was really, and not that it shows a lot, but I was. I was surprised at how much of it looked like it was going to be practical, like people in suits rather than CGI. And I was so like, oh my gosh, they're actually making this movie kind of moment. It was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, sorry, the dog made a noise.
I like the second one even more, which is all about Andrew Adamson.
These books have been read by hundreds of millions of people over three or four generations, and it's a huge responsibility to be making a film that's going to live up to those people's expectations.
Action!
And I felt pretty good about Andrew Adamson as a choice to direct.
I remember a lot of us. Well, I was one of the ones who I wonder how many things I'm going to misremember through this podcast. I remember being fairly optimistic
after Shrek 2. I was really excited that he was directing.
Yeah, I thought it doesn't mean that he's going to be putting in fart jokes, you know? Because
though there was concern about that. Now, Jim Fan, maybe you remember the comical toilet flush.
Oh yes.
Oh,
yeah. Oh,
I can't even remember where this came from exactly. Do you remember where it came from, Jim Fan?
I remember.
I don't know where it came from, but I do remember the resolution to it.
Well, what happened was there was a screening. And I don't remember if it was just an individual scene screening or an early film screening. But what happened was it was the scene where Edmund goes into the bathroom, and in that rendition there was no music for the scene. And everyone said that just the timing of everything, when he walked into the room there, you couldn't really see what room it was.
This is the scene in the movie where Lucy is going in for the second time,
and Edmund comes out of the bathroom, and you hear the toilet flush. Well, in the movie, there's music, and it's obviously a very dramatic moment. You're kind of, it doesn't come across as funny, but apparently a huge number of people in the audience just burst out laughing when they heard the toilet flush. And I thought, you know, if there were no music in that scene, I could kind of see that.
Yeah,
happening.
I can kind of see it. And because this being the guy that directed Shrek, we're already maybe a little sensitive to this, kind of thing.
Yeah.
This comes out, we're going, and it kind of went, we still don't have 100% grasp on what's the tone of this movie going to be. Mm-hmm. And so there was this moment of horror for some people where they went, what? There's a comical toilet flush in this movie? What's the Shrek guy doing to Narnia? And of course, mm-hmm. ended up being total non-issue. But I remember seeing it for the first time, and it was like 5 seconds after I heard it, I was like, wait, was that it? Was that it right there? That was what we were freaking out about?
Yeah. I'm trying to think about what were the other Glumpuddle, you mentioned just before we started the podcast, one of the first, I think a thread called The First Signs of a Change or something like that.
Uh-huh, where it was implied, I think it was Andrew Adamson in an interview or something had talked about, oh, it would be a shame if Tumnus, who's such a memorable character, if he disappeared after the beginning. And I think that was one of the, maybe the first signs of something that wasn't in the book, which was expanding Tumnus's role, which is something I ended up liking, but was, yeah. You know, again, it's hilarious to think of, because at the time, it was the first change I can remember hearing about. So it kind of felt monumental. I felt like, oh my gosh, what are they doing with this book? Having Tumnus have a bigger role. Oh no. And now you look back at it now after all we've been through, and it's like kind of laughable.
Well, yeah. What's hilarious is, you know, we made such a huge deal over so many changes in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when actually the changes that actually were significant or problematic weren't noticeable before you saw the film.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not like you saw them in production blogs or in casting interviews or anything like that.
Of course, the cloth over the wardrobe, things like that, felt really important. I'm not sure we knew about that until the trailer came out.
Yeah, I don't think we did.
Now, Jim Phan, where were you when you saw the first trailer, and what was your reaction to that? At this point, had you read the books?
Oh, yeah. I had read the books at that point, but I couldn't tell you what my reaction would have been, because it would all have been like I had just gotten into Narnia. So this wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't until after I got on the computer and I started joining forums and I started expressing my opinion and seeing other people's opinions being expressed that it became more of a big deal. I would say it was more around the time when maybe the second trailer or the super trailer came out. That was more when I was around to kind of like nitpick and appreciate it.
Oh, it was.
But it wasn't for the first one, for sure.
I remember, I think it was a couple weeks before, my sister got an early screening of it. She was at Biola, as I recall, and she called me, and she was, you know, describing it to me. And at the time, I wasn't on staff at NarniWeb, so I had to actually send a spy report and say, hey, my sister just called, and she gave me all these details, and I was bouncing off the walls, typing out the spy report. And then Tyrion replied, says, oh, yeah, this is great, and he posted it. I thought that was so cool. I think it was about a month later when he asked me to join the staff, which is awesome. But when I actually saw it, I had a pretty positive reaction to it. I was still in this kind of no man's land of, well, this all looks good. You know, they've been filming for a while and that all looks good, but give me something concrete to really look at. I love the tone. Still, I just watched it today. I love the tone of the first half of the trailer. There are many rooms and many doors and
96, 97. 98, 99, 100. Ready or not, here I come.
Really, I think I at least get caught up on it, and I think it does capture the tone of the book.
Well, I first saw it late at night. And I had I lived out in the country at that point, and I think we had dual ISDN, really super super slow, super slow internet, and so it was gonna take maybe a day to load up a decent one.
Did you watch it on TV though? Because remember a shorter version of it,
we didn't
like a
have
one
TV.
Minute version of it premiered. It was
we did
after
not have TV.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets on TV.
Yeah, no, we did not have TV, and so I basically went on. I got. You know how they used to have like the 240 by 180 pixel versions?
Yeah.
I think that was the first one I watched. And, you know, I blew it up maybe twice as big just so it wouldn't be so tiny. And I watched it on my iMac. And, you know, the old, I guess I think I had a lime colored iMac, you know, back in the day. And I loaded, I guess one of the, it wouldn't take too terribly long. I loaded it up and I watched it. And I was by myself. My brother was in the room and I basically watched it. And then I just put both my arms in the air. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was so cool. I thought this is going to be great. And then over the next, I don't know how many days,
even
we downloaded.
Even though Aslan looks so fake in that trailer.
I couldn't tell at that size. But then we loaded up the
I think even I could tell.
Oh,
and there
was
a
good
lot of
trailer.
I love the first half of the trailer. The second half, I was a little more disappointed with because it felt so actiony. But I was still, it definitely got me excited about it. And of course, that was probably one of our first glimpses Was that our first glimpse of the melting river scene? I think it may have been.
Yeah, it also gave us a clue into what the battle was going to look like.
Yeah, and we all suspected, you know, we pretty much knew at that point the battle was going to be expanded upon quite a bit. And it's funny, you look at the trailer now, and the shots are definitely unfinished. Like, the shot of the Phoenix going across, mm-hmm. like, they haven't even added it, hardly any of the other digital characters yet, so it's just a shot of the fire going across, and we all thought, is that the witch using her wand? Is she, like, shooting fire out or something?
Oh, our dog found the squeaker.
How nice. Rillian. So this is probably a few months after the trailer. Do you remember the four winds? Maybe you remember this too, Jim.
It was something about there. I think there was like a news article or something that came out that quoted. I don't know. Now maybe I'm misremembering it. You could jog my memory.
It was
a bit.
Somebody quoted something about like. I think they're actually criticizing it and said, oh, I didn't like how Aslan crowns them in the name of the four winds.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And people were freaking out, like, instead of the name of the Emperor Beyond the Sea, and guys, hello, open the book. He doesn't crown them in the name of anything in the book. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was like, what, the four winds? What the heck does that mean? And I was one of the few people not freaking out. I was just kind of confused, like, wait, what does that mean? What does the four winds mean? I don't get it. And then, of course, ended up not being in the movie. But I guess
it's the last airbender.
Now, that would be a problem.
That's what the four winds was. Sorry,
yeah,
go.
But it's
continue.
Just, yeah, but like you were saying, most of the issues in Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe seem petty in comparison. I remember I was freaking out. I remember there was a script fragment that was online which told us that, you know, when Tumnus sees Lucy, he jumps behind a tree. And I was so annoyed. I was like, he doesn't do that in the book, and that scene is so iconic, and what, there's a cloth over the wardrobe, and all these details that seem so big, and now they're kind of, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, I don't know if we saw it in the movie, I think we heard about it in an interview or something, and we found out there's a blue bottle on the windowsill. It's like the forums erupted with joy.
Oh, I know.
I don't think so. Are you? I'm pretty sure.
Oh, people noticed that, and there was like, this was,
I avoided,
this was a thing to note of importance.
Now, I avoided spoilers probably like the last week or so before seeing it, so maybe I didn't think we knew about the blue bottle. I remember someone posting, wouldn't it be cool if they had the blue bottle? And
maybe
even
I,
the super purist I was at the time, you think
you're
I'm a purist
like,
now?
Oh, huh? We don't need that.
Yeah. See, even me, like I was way more of a purist back then than I was now. It was terrible. even I was like, okay, guys, this is like number 108 on my list of important things in this to be in this movie. But then I saw the movie. And saw the blue bottle, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, I can't believe they actually put that in there. I thought that was really cool.
So we've talked about, again, this is going to be redundant, but it fits. What was your guys' impression of the film? This is just summing up briefly.
Well, my experience seeing it for the first time was I saw it a week early, and thanks to Tyrion. Which I found out about that just a few days before I was going to. He's saying, hey, I hope you're available because I just got your tickets to see it early. Fortunately, I was. And I was so nervous before it started. Like literally just nervous. I had a pretty good feeling about it, but was really terrified the whole thing would just come down. I remember I was sitting in the theater with my brother. And by the way, the movie was delayed like 20 minutes because they couldn't get like the combination lock open to open the film. And so we were waiting there wondering, are they going to get it open? I was just probably squirming in my seat. I was terrified. I was so tense. And it started, and I remember the scene where Lucy first steps into the wardrobe, you know, the blue bottle, the mothballs, just followed it beat for beat from the book, everything except for the cloth, basically. I remember I had this thought, like, oh my gosh, maybe it's happened. Maybe Andrew Adamson has just nailed it. And the movie progressed, and it ended up having its ups and downs. All in all, I remember when it was over, I breathed this sigh of relief, because I was like, okay, It's not bad. It's not great, but I feel pretty good about it. At least the worst didn't happen, you know. And but I walked out of it feeling a little disappointed in that I wanted a lot more. But overall, I definitely gave it a positive review, and I was relieved.
Yeah. Yeah. What I think is interesting is, and now you can correct me here if I'm wrong, but I think you gave it pretty much the same rating. Even though you're more of a purist back then, it's not like you were really disappointed. or more disappointed with it then than you are when you watch it now?
No, I don't think so. I ended up seeing it 7 times in theaters total.
I think I may have seen it 5.
Yeah.
I think 6 was what I ended out.
6. And it was just because, like, and that's one of the things that whenever I'm trying to explain to people today, my fandom of something, they'll say, like, why would you go see something even if you don't like it that much? I'll say, look, I saw The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe 7 times, and I thought it was just okay because I'm that much of a fan of it. Because I had waited 4 years for that movie. I had so much invested in it emotionally.
Case in point, exactly why I saw Desolation of Smog twice.
Yes, as did I.
Same reason.
But yeah, like, it, all in all, although obviously my opinion of the film was much more developed, having seen it a million times, I don't think it has changed significantly much. I think it's good. I mean, I don't think it's the kind of movie that would be worth 4 years of anticipation. Probably no movie could live up to that. Well, all I mean is that it's not fair to judge it by that standard. Ultimately, yeah, I do think it's pretty good. It's fairly well-made fantasy movie. Yeah, that's it's not terrible. It's not wonderful. It's good. You know, and it's pretty well-made.
How about you, Jim Fan?
For me, the first time I saw Lion with Wardrobe, my experience seeing the movie actually really overshadowed the movie itself.
Yeah,
it was the first time I'd ever been. Yeah, it was the first time I'd ever been to a movie theater. This theater was, in hindsight, this place was trash. Like, this was the most ghetto movie theater I've ever been to. The movie, like, the whole, like, I would say probably the whole train sequence up until they got to the professor's house, it was like off and on, like sound went off, the image was distorted, it kept going black, and then they finally, like, got someone, like, in front of their projector and, like, fiddled around with it, kind of got it to work, but the sound kept dying at like different parts of the movie. It was terrible.
So maybe
it
the
was
part where Father Christmas said, "Oh, battles are ugly when." And so you didn't hear about
pretty
that
much.
Part.
Like,
that was
an
issue, by the way. Battles are
that was a
battles
huge
are,
issue.
Battles are ugly affairs. Susan
I
fighting.
I remember distinctly the one part it went silent was like right after the battle when Edmund is injured and Lucy gives him the her cordial and whatever.
Magic
and like
blade.
The whole, yeah, that thing was like all completely dead. You couldn't hear anything. And I was like, I want to hear it. It looks good.
That's terrible.
So I left the movie and I felt like almost sick.
Rocked.
Because, like, you know, well, you wait so long to see the movie, and then not only is there so many,
you poor thing, you waited 8 months.
There's so many technical problems, but then also, you know, there's the inevitable changes and things that you didn't like or whatever, and it's difficult. It was difficult to put the two together. It was like I went back the next day. I saw it again. I saw it 4 more times after that in theaters, and I got a lot better after that. But on the whole, that first showing was just terrible. It was terrible.
That's too bad. I remember having nightmares that I would, like, sleep through the midnight showing or something. Literally, I had at least 3 or 4 nightmares that last few months where I had one nightmare where I bought tickets for opening night, meaning Friday night, when I should have bought tickets for Thursday night, midnight showing. And I was waking up, no!
But I think when I saw it, I was, I think I had a more favorable impression of it than Glumpuddle, but at the same time, I think, I don't know if I had the same high desires. I'm not going to say the same as high hopes or expectations, but like it's high desires for it. So for me, I knew that it was not. I could obviously tell it was not as excellent as, you know, say it wasn't going to go down in history as one of the great films in history, you know, or piece of cinema history. But I thought, you know, this is I'm pretty happy with this. I think it was only after I maybe saw it and then started to think about it a little more, I started to become a little more critical of it. Not on subsequent viewings, but just on thinking about certain lines of dialogue and the fact that they cut out the deeper magic. And so my view of it is a little lower, but still, like, even just now I watched the trailer again, the very first teaser, actually, and I thought, man, I kind of want to watch this again.
Yeah. Now, how long... So it was really just a few days after Wardrobe came out, which was December 9th, 2005, when we got a spy report that Prince Caspian had been greenlit.
Well, I don't. I think that was actually on January 1st.
It was right after. It wasn't very long at all.
I'm looking at it. December 12th, 2005. Source claims Prince Caspian greenlit was the headline.
Because it's interesting because the origin of the Narnia Web podcast was really about the same time.
Of Narnia News in a nutshell, you mean?
Right, of Narnia News in a nutshell, and just so people so they understand the way that the podcast originated, you had and actually, I'm just looking at the archives here, and I guess we don't actually have. The original. I'm just looking here real quick. We do not have the very first podcast because I started doing the podcast. And in fact, I think my first episode, or one of the first episodes, I basically did a whole episode. And then it was the night before it was greenlit. And by the time I finished editing, I looked and it had just been greenlit. So I re-recorded the entire podcast, which wasn't super long. The original episode podcast title was Narnia News in a Nutshell. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool? Because there's so much.
Being the key part of that.
Yeah, Nutshell being the key part. Because I thought, wouldn't it be cool? Because there's so much news happening. And there were just all these little spy reports and rumors going around. And I was just really invested in the forums at that point. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be cool if I could just kind of take all the news for that week or something and sum it up into a 10, 15 minute time span, you know, just kind of sum it all up, give you the gist so that basically you could, you know, disappear into the woods for a week, come out, listen to it, and you'd be pretty much caught up, you know? And so I started doing that and I did these little episodes and, I got good feedback from it and people started liking it.
Yeah. I remember you did, sending me a private message asking me what I thought. I was like, I think I asked you, what's a podcast? And the way you described it is exactly how you described it just now. Like, well, it's kind of the short version of what's going on in the forum.
Tyrion, well, that's what's interesting is this almost, it came very close to becoming the official podcast for NarniaFans.com. And for various reasons, it just never really took off, never really got off the ground. And I was approached by Tyrion, and he sent me links to some threads where he was saying, hey, you know, what if for the April Fools, we joined forces with Rillian. I think that was the phrase he used. And the idea is, well, hey, we'll just coordinate with Rillian, make it a little more believable, and he'll broadcast broadcast the same stories from his thing that we do from our front page.
Yeah, and stories like the Caspian Susan romance, as I recall.
Some brilliant sadist had that idea.
Thought it would be hilarious to post. There's going to be a romance between Caspian and Susan. That's not how it was said, but that was basically
It was slightly less extreme than a column I wrote under a pseudonym saying, hey, wouldn't it be hilarious if one of the dwarves from The Hobbit had a romance with a female elf character? Just slightly more realistic.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
October 2nd, 2006 when you posted the first one with me in it. Where you had a guest on the podcast. And that was something we talked about for a while. At the time, there were some technical hurdles to overcome. I didn't even have a laptop yet. Yeah, there you go. And I was actually on the phone, and Rillian, in his technical ingenuity, figured out how to like take the call or whatever, which is why the quality sounds so bad in that initial version. But that was the wow. It was a long time ago, but that was the first time.
That led to the Narnia Web Council, and I'm gonna go over right now a list of. I believe all the people we've had on the podcast. I started, and then Glum Puddle came on. We've also had our own Jim Fan.
Yeah.
We've had, and this is in no particular order, we've had Tyrion on, I believe, for one episode. Doobie was on for several, now called Clipsy.
Mm-hmm.
We had Skillet Dude.
I miss Doobie.
Coraline. Gents. Warrior for Jesus and Dr. Elwin Ransom. We actually had 9 people.
Mm-hmm.
We've had 9 people join in the podcast at one time or another.
Yep.
What was the most we had at one time? Do you remember?
I think 4 is the most, isn't it? Have you ever done 4?
And we kind of found that 3 is kind of the magic number. It's easy for someone to kind of get lost in the conversation and just decide to, like me, I'll just be silent for now. And this was all in the midst of Prince Caspian. So really, like, it was...
Yeah.
So, yeah, Prince Caspian's gearing up. And I remember, you know, like, as Wardrobe did very well at the box office, exceeded expectations. And so immediately we're going, what's going to happen?
$750 million, now, I believe.
Jim Fan, talk about the experience for you, because this would have been... Was this the first time you really anticipated a film from the very beginning? Like, actually reading the report, hey, we're going to make this movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Not just a Narnia film, but for any film, really. So it was definitely interesting taking it from the beginning and going all the way through.
So 2006, some of the news, I mean, some pre-production rumors and some little things here and there. I didn't get a whole lot. The Wardrobe Extended Edition came out, and people barely noticed. But some of the big issues, I'm trying to remember what some of them were. Of course, obviously, Prince Caspian, very meaningful to me because I got to visit the set.
Yeah, tell us about that process, because that was, and I was so envious. I've never committed the sin of envy so constantly. And I'm trying to remember when I found out about it, but I remember doing the podcast with you right after you got back.
Yeah, and at the time I don't even remember why. Looking back, we decided not to tell anybody I'd gone. For some reason, we decided to keep it a big secret.
Wasn't there an embargo? Like, you couldn't say anything about it for a while.
Yeah, for a while I couldn't post it. It was like a month and a half, which is grueling, where I couldn't post anything.
Why was there an embargo? I remember this vaguely.
Well, because there were other writers there too. Coming Soon to Annette was there. Rotten Tomatoes was there. IGN.
Oh, that's right.
And you know, we all post them on the same day. God, it was my first time being out of the country. Whenever people ask me, you know, ever been out of the country, I say, yeah, I've been to Narnia. that was my experience. But it was so surreal because I was totally jet lagged, other side of the world. And
how many days was it?
I was there 2 days. And I saw Dancing Lawn, where it was kind of half finished. I saw Aslan Tower. I remember that freaked me out because I was like, wow, this set is way too big. Aslan Tower should be small and claustrophobic. Of course, when you look in the final movie, it doesn't feel as big.
Yeah.
I remember the big castle courtyard. I remember seeing that and just couldn't believe how big it was and actually be there. But probably the biggest thing of all was actually getting to see them film. And it's the scene, if you look at the scene where Peter and Edmund are walking out of Aslan Tau, and Edmund is holding Peter's sword. The shot where Peter actually pulls his sword out of the sheath, if you were to pan the camera over to the left 90 degrees, you would see me standing there. which is, so every time I see that, every time I see that shot in the movie, I think of that. But got to interview a lot, Andrew Adamson, a lot of the actors and stuff, and it was really cool. Like, the people from Disney, really, they asked me, really me in particular, I was really appreciative of the fact that they wanted to know, like, you as a fan of the book, you know, what do you think of this? And it was great seeing Disney having that kind of interest in the fan base, and I was really encouraged by that. But it was still undoubtedly one of the great experiences of my life. And I read the grueling wait to be able to post it, and had to release, you know, details a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember the whole Prince Caspian. The casting thing was interesting. I remember with, you know, Ben Barnes, I was so crestfallen when I finally got the news. Not really, because I kind of knew that, because I had my little self-adventure where at one point I got, I thought, hey, these movies are so cool. I wonder why I can't audition. And so I thought, well, I'm going to try to find Pippa Hall's contact information. So I did. I was scouring about the internet and contacting different people and stuff. And I finally got her mailing address and her phone numbers. And I talked to her once or twice on the phone. And I sent her a DVD of my little reading I did. And I got, you know, email back saying, hey, you know, that was actually kind of cool. So I sent it to Andrew Adams, and I'm going, and I was, you know, freaking out.
Man.
And then later I contacted her later.
Could have been a very different past several years.
Could have been very different. It could have been a very different experience.
I could have been interviewing you.
Could have been, yeah, I could have been the one right there next to you. But, and then it was funny, was I got a contact from her later saying, because I just kind of said, hey, you know, I waited a long time and just said, hey, you know, what's the status? And she said, well, they've changed the profile of the character. Because at first she said, well, like, I liked your reading, but might you be too old? because I was about the same age as William.
It's only said, cast Ben Barnes.
Well, it was funny because yeah. she said, "Well, I think you might be too old because you're about the same age as William Moseley." I said, "Yeah, I am. We're about a few months apart." And then she got back to me and says, "Hey, probably won't be happening because they've changed the profile for the character and what they want the character to look like." And I thought, okay, they probably want a kid, you know, a few years younger, maybe, you know, darker hair. And then they hire this 26-year-old, you know, with his long black hair.
When they first cast him, he was 25 years old. The character's 13 in the book.
People freaking out about that.
I saw the news. I thought, huh, they went for someone even older. And then I looked and I thought, well, he actually doesn't look like he's in his mid-20s, you know, necessarily. Maybe. But so that was my little... that was the closest I ever got to the set.
And you actually got to interview him sometime later, right?
I did. He was actually
He resisted the urge to say, "So, I think I could have made a pretty good Caspian, huh?"
I actually resisted the urge to say, "Why did you kiss?"
Now, Jim Fan, talk about Comic-Con. In terms of anticipating Prince Caspian, that's one of my biggest memories.
And that's my biggest claim to fame, too. Like, okay, Glumpuddle got to go to the set, and Rillian got to interview Ben Barnes, but I got to go to Comic-Con.
The torch! Torch!
I think I win.
You were the one that broke the news that the role of the torch was being expanded, as I recall.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Comic-Con, that's one of the craziest, most fun experiences I've had. Remember, this is the first time I didn't even know what Comic-Con was. I was like, I'm going to get tickets for 2 days. Like, I'm going to go on Friday and I'm going to walk around. And then that way I can go on Saturday and sit all day for the panel. So I kind of, my parents have a picture that they took of me when they dropped me off at Comic-Con. And I look at it today and I'm like, I have no idea what I'm getting myself into. Because, you know, you walk into, you know, the Comic-Con and you walk the exhibit floor and it's just like mind-blowing.
Yeah. Talk about what actually saw. You saw like footage that showed the torch, it showed Reepy Cheap, it showed a bunch of stuff. Which we didn't get to see. All we could do is read your description of it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God. I'm trying to remember what was on there. They showed it was... A lot of it was previs. Well, not a lot of it. Some of it, it was very unfinished, obviously, because they were still in the middle of shooting. But they were showing, it was the bit from the Night Raid. And they were, there was some stuff that they were throwing in there just for, like, laughs, for joke. I think, but which no, actually
there was the Gimli
did.
Thing, right? Where they is
Yeah. Which people were like, oh, they're just doing that for fun. And then we got the deleted scenes and that was actually in there.
They actually do that, yeah.
Yeah, but I remember they showed that. But then they were, you know, they were showing Edmund, you know, who was signaling the, Peter.
Signaling the griffins using the torch.
Yeah, with the torch. Yeah. And we're like, he has the torch. And we were all excited. What else did they show? I remember that was the first time that we, because they got Andrew Adamson and Ben Barnes up on the big screen and they did an interview from where they were filming. Uh-huh. And I remember that was the first time that we heard Ben Barnes speak because he hadn't really done any movies before then or anything that people in general could ever like listen to. So we're like, oh, this is what he sounds like, which actually didn't end up.
Right, because he has the accent in the actual movie.
He has the accent, but I remember that was cool.
Yeah, even when I talked to him, he didn't do the accent for us. I don't think that, which is funny, because he told us about his Telmarine accent. I don't know why we didn't ask him to just do it right there, but that would have been smart.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Great, now I feel like a complete idiot. All the ratings of the podcast go to 1 star. Rillian's
My gosh, but with Wardrobe, we kind of had to, I had to really think, wait, what were the issues of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? I really had to think for a minute.
Yeah.
With Prince Caspian, where do I begin? The White Witch, I first saw concept art of the White Witch on set, and I asked the assistant costume designer who was there, well, why is there concept art of the White Witch over there? And I was quickly just sort of, okay, we can't talk about that, basically, yeah. And I remember just thinking, is the White Witch going to, like, appear at the battle or something and just start turning people into stone? I mean, I thought the worst. I was terrified.
Yeah.
There was the whole issue of the structure of the book, the four chapter flashback.
The casting of Reepicheep was huge.
Yeah.
That was the first time that I was on, like, the regular podcast, I think, is when we were talking about Reepicheep.
And I was so excited about Eddie Izzard. I thought he sounded awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do. I know you don't, Jim Fan.
I don't.
when he was first cast, they had the poll, how do you feel, on a scale like 1 to 5, and I gave it a 5. I wish I could have given it a 6. I felt so excited. This is such an important character, not necessarily for Prince Caspian, but for, you know, the series as a whole. And I thought, that sounds so perfect. That's exactly what Reaper Sheep should sound like.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to remember all the. There's just too much. But here's the thing: we also knew that Prince Caspian was gonna. I mean, we were discussing changes before we knew of any changes.
Yeah. Whereas Wardrobe is a much more linear story, and it fits the three act structure a little more cleanly. Prince Caspian, I think we all kind of knew they've got to kind of shift some things around.
Because at the same time, no one wanted them to go the BBC route. And we said, well, if we don't want them to go to BBC, unless even that was a change, you know, and trying to be very close to the structure of the book, but it still changed everything, you know.
Honestly, for me, I'm trying to remember what was not an issue with Prince Caspian. There was Peter's character. Maybe we kind of knew we got the sense he was going to be kind of arrogant. Pretty much from the very beginning. I really liked the trailer. I had a positive reaction to it. The White Witch was the only thing that really freaked me out.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw the trailer, it came out.
I don't remember any ruins in Narnia.
I wonder who lived here.
I think we did.
I think it's time we found out what went on here.
Who are you?
I am Prince Caspian.
I was in the middle of moving from California to Chicago, and I watched it in a hotel in Arkansas. And I was like, guys, I'm going to have the computer from this time to this time because the trailer is coming out, and I need to watch the trailer.
Well, I remember just we were talking about the marketing and then the timing of with Iron Man.
Yeah.
And the Indiana Jones and how that was going to hurt. I got to mention this because I just made a little note. I was talking about just all the things we made a huge deal about that turned out to be really nothing. Do you remember the big announcement that Prince Caspian is going to be classified as a British film?
Do I remember that? Barely.
No, I don't.
We had a whole podcast discussion about it.
Well, because we had so little news at the time. You know, it was all we had to go on.
There were all these comments in the forums like, yeah, this is going to be so interesting. And then, you know, some people, maybe the wiser ones, were saying, this probably influences tax purposes, but not really much else. I don't think it even is going to be released in the UK before it's released in the US. But it was just so funny. I was just looking at the things that got attention that, you know, now looking back, it changed nothing in the content of the film. Because some people were wondering, well, maybe it'll be a little more indie feeling. Maybe it'll have less special effects.
There were so many things that Prince Caspian, I just, from every issue, even for heaven's sake, even the taxes were controversial. Every single aspect of that movie, I just went into it going, what's going to happen? I had so many questions like, how does this tie into this? What are they going to do with that? And we've talked about that, you know, at Unlike Wardrobe, where we weren't around, the podcast wasn't around when Wardrobe came out, but you can just, glance through the podcast page if you want to see what some of the issues were there.
Yeah.
But so I went into it with this, like, having no notion of, is this going to be a really great or going to be a big debacle? And I overall liked all three of us are, I think, Prince Caspian defenders to an extent. I think,
for
you know,
sure.
there are a lot of things in Prince Caspian I really don't. See, the way I always tell people, people ask me what I thought about Prince Caspian as an adaptation. It's always, you know, for me, Wardrobe is, it's got a couple of great things and a couple, you know, bad things. But mostly it's just, it's good. It's not great. It's fine. And then Caspian is almost 50-50 bad and great for me.
Yeah.
For me, Prince Caspian comes out a little bit ahead, but that's a very controversial position. I know most fans did not care for Prince Caspian.
Well, it's kind of funny that you listen to you talk about Prince Caspian now. Like, when I, in hindsight, looking back at you know, going through the three movies and the process and lead up and how I felt about it then and how I feel about it now, Prince Caspian is by far the most positive. Like, it's almost difficult for me to remember things that I really didn't like, really hated about Prince Caspian.
They just don't carry for that much weight.
Yeah, no, for some reason, Prince Caspian
I can definitely think of things I hate about Prince Caspian, but I can also I can also think of things I really love about it.
Glumpuddle has the memory of an elephant.
You never forget. But
I never forget. I have problems with you, Glumpuddle.
Suspian, for heaven's sake. You remember that?
I remember that, but
remember when
the
TV spot came out?
Things that I did like about it. The positives just have kind of outweighed the negatives for me. And I'm not saying it's the same way for everyone else, but for me, like, Prince Caspian ranks in my probably my top 10, top 5 films ever.
Wow.
That's how much I like that as a film. Like, take it away. Forget that it's Narnia. I thought that's a very good film. And not just like in terms of the actual story, but just in terms of cinematography and how it looks.
It's huge.
It is huge, but I don't know.
Quite a revelation here, episode 100.
That was when I had my website out. I was looking at it was doing a lot of graphics at the time, and just everything about that movie, like, it was perfect for like someone who was into graphics. I don't know, it just worked.
So the things you like about it overshadow even the memory of the TV spot showing Caspian and Susan kissing being released.
Yes,
which,
it does.
That is still probably one of the lowest moments for me as an Arnie fan. I remember because there have been rumors of it, that there being some kind of Caspian Susan thing, and I denied it every step of the way.
Yeah.
I said, look, there's just a little stupid flirting, and we'll roll our eyes at it. That's what's going to happen. And people are just exaggerating it. And no, that TV spot came out that made it look like there was going to be a huge part of the movie. That's the way the TV spot makes it look. And shows him kissing at the end, and I was just inconsolable. I'd been trying so hard to deny it. I came into work the next day. They noticed, like, why are you so down? And I told them. They were like, okay, whatever.
But even overall, like, we kind of, Prince Caspian was kind of fairly positive. Do you guys remember Voyage of the Dawn Treader, just the news, and did everything just seem, maybe it's just my memory, but it seemed like it was all just slower, consistently slower.
Well, it got slower, obviously, initially, because Caspian didn't do very well at the box office, or not, it was below expectations.
Then I think they tried to keep fans out of the loop more.
Yeah, I think they definitely did. But there was that stage after Caspian came out where, what is happening? Because there was just no news. And then in December, it was actually Christmas Eve, wasn't it? Where it was announced that that Disney was going to be dropping Narnia. So for a month, it was in no man's land, and then it came to Fox. Yeah. And then which started
like
a new era of Narnia movies, of course. And and that is even more well documented in the podcast than Prince Caspian.
Yeah.
We really started doing them quite
because
regularly.
When we had our
if you
want
to see what some of the issues were, just glance through the podcast page around that time, and you can see.
Yeah,
you think about it, guys. This was 10 years. It's 2014.
Been
over 10 years of history we've covered here.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Narnia Web. Narnia. Wow, really? Yeah, Narnia Web started in late 2003.
Yeah,
I joined it in May 2004.
I joined in 2004, probably close.
I joined
September,
in June 2005.
I joined maybe in August, and then just linked around the forums reading before I started posting. But
well, I remember. Yeah, I remember almost immediately when I discovered Narnia Web, thinking this is so, like, almost immediately knowing this is probably something I'm going to spend a lot of time on, and this is a big deal. And that's why I spent so much time trying to find just the right screen name, because I knew this is something I'm going to have to live with. And I won't tell you what the other ones are that are probably, they're probably still registered, probably still exist. I should go look it up. But I remember I knew.
If you didn't transfer them over to the new forum.
Yeah, that's right, because I didn't transfer them over. So I guess they don't exist anymore. But I remember knowing that. Okay, I wanted to include Puddleglum somehow. I wanted to reference Puddleglum in some way. And I was thinking all these different combinations, most of which were cheesy. And at some point I thought, why don't I just reverse it? so that it's referencing my favorite character, but it's also kind of an original name at the same time. So,
well, it's funny. You guys will think this is hilarious. The reason I actually did go after, because I thought, well, if it's not going to be Rinden, what other name could I go after? And you'll think this is hilarious, but at the time when Narnia was first coming out, I was interested in acting. That's what I wanted to do with my life. Uh-huh. Ended up taking a very different career direction. But I thought, I timed it out on how, realistically, when each film would be coming out. I thought, which role could I play? No, seriously, I thought, which role could I actually go after? I thought, well, Prince Caspian, I'll probably be a little bit too old. And I thought, well, Rillian, I might be able to play Rillian or Tyrion even. And I thought,
well,
hey,
Rillian, you know, I hear the Mark Gordon company is developing a movie right now.
Really?
And are looking for this character Rillian.
No way!
Do you think you're old enough now?
I think Pippa Hall works with child actors.
So, Gym Fan, I assume you are a fan of gymnasts.
You would be correct, sir. Ah. Yeah, my name is not Narnia related. I've had the same username ever since the first forum that I ever joined, and I decided to keep it because I'm one of those people who like to have the thing same across everywhere. So it's not very original, but I kept it. I stuck with it, and if you Google it, I'm the one who comes up. So okay. It works for me.
All right.
Well, guys, this has been incredible.
This has been nostalgic, and the fire is starting to the fire is starting to die down a little bit. I guess it's about time to go.
The cocoa has cooled,
but all the drama, all the fun of like it's something that, you know, it's not always fun. Sometimes there are moments of stress, like the Caspian Susan kiss.
Yep.
I look back at it now, and it makes me laugh at some of the things that we stressed out about. This was not the most important thing. This little minute detail. But at the time, it seemed like it, and that's what made it so fun.
Right. And that's why I'm looking forward. I just look forward to, I really miss it, you know, even though there were some things that were awesome, and there were some things that weren't so awesome. I the past couple of years, I thought, man, I just miss the experience of logging online, looking at the latest news, reacting to it, and just being able to post an opinion about it. And I really feel this sort of kind of, I almost feel parental about it. I feel very protective of these books. They really mean something to me. And I'm looking forward to doing it all again with The Silver Chair. I can't wait to see
awesome.
What issues, like good or bad. Gosh, I hope it's mostly good. just whatever issues there are, I can't wait to be posting opinions about it and seeing your opinions as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
People listening, by the way, if you have any memories connected to first three films, or just Narnia in general, be sure to post it. I've enjoyed the first several years anticipating Narnia films. Looking forward to the fourth.
This has been great, guys. Thank you very much.
Here's to 10 more years.
Nice walk down memory lane. And of course, there's no other way you can end up. Well, because we do every podcast, but there's never been a more appropriate podcast to end with.
Further up and further in.
Amen.
Dang, that was cheesy at the end.